you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, the Believe You Me podcast. We are back. It is I and Harrington, Mike Harrington, just me and Mike. We're going to talk all things MMA. Anthony Smith is now the co-host, but he's only doing Mondays, I think, probably. Mondays or Thursdays. Obviously, he has a very busy schedule and he's fighting some of the best people in the world. So he can't make it every time. Hopefully, eventually, he does do. But until then, it's just me and Mike Harrington with your questions, with Brian popping in. We're talking about a lot of things, but Mike, how are you? Even though I know you were late and you were stuck behind the traffic and you were talking shit about kids coming home from school, you know, they got to go to school. They want an education. They don't want to end up like you.
I don't think they need to take up two lanes of traffic, right, just to let some kid off the bus into his mom's waiting arms. It's crazy, and it did make me about 10 minutes late for this. And honestly, it's those kids' fault. I blame every single one of those kids.
You can't go past the school buses here, can you? For international, like when a school bus stops, you're not allowed to go past it. I mean, I get it. Kids could be walking off the bus, and we don't want any kids getting run over. You know, that's, you know, first thing hit first. Let's not kill any kids. But when you're late, I've been known to go past the school bus sometimes. You know what I mean? Call me a rebel, but I'm like, there's no one around. It's pulled over. I'm driving past that fucking bus.
Oh, man, dude, some of the worst tickets of my life, though, have been school zone tickets, you know? Like, they'll cash you for going, like, 17 and a 15. You know, they will really put the screws to you. And those are expensive tickets, so I couldn't ask my girlfriend to risk it.
No, they're bastards. They're bastards. See, when we, the elementary school where our kids all went to, and now only Lucas goes there, there's a cop. He's not there every day, so you kind of, you know, you take chances sometimes. You know what I mean? When I say take chances, dropping the kids off at our school is a zoo. It's a mess. You know what I mean? There's like a whole system. It's a one-way thing. It's like a bloody labyrinth. Once you go in there, you ain't coming out for quite some time. It's a fucking nightmare. It's a disaster. Or you can quickly pull up at the side of the road. Have a great day, Lucas. And he jumps out. He's almost 12 years old. You know what I mean? But you're not supposed to stop there. And this miserable prick of a cop, he sits there and he waits, you know, and all we're doing is dropping our kids off and boom, he's got me a couple of times giving me a ticket. He's had Rebecca, because she normally does the school run more often than not, about four times. Miserable bastard. We're just trying to drop our kids off at school.
Yeah, that does sound pretty rough, but that does feel like a workaround to the system. If you do it every day and you only get caught six times in a year, you know, like how much is your time worth? How much is Rebecca's time worth? That, it seems like the price of doing business in Orange County.
Yeah, it sounds like me with the carpool, because with the carpool lane, I drive in the carpool lane all the time. I'm sorry. I do apologize, but I flaunt the rules and I'm yet to be given a ticket. When I have driven here, I've been here now for 10 years. I drive in the carpool lane all the time. Of course, I think I have a system down. For those that don't know what carpool is, international, there's a lane on the freeways here that if there's two people or more in it, you can drive in that. But if there's just one, you can't drive in it. It's to encourage people to ride share, more people in one cars. I get it. But if I'm late, I've got somewhere to be and I'm in traffic and I'm not moving, I'm getting in that fucking carpool lane. But what I always try and do is like nestle myself between someone in front of me and someone at the back. And I'm constantly checking my mirrors. You know what I mean? And if I see a cop, I get out. Hey, 10 years, never had a ticket yet. And then when I do get the ticket, as you just said, it's worth it for the amount of time it has saved me. But maybe I just need to get my affairs in order and set off on time.
I thought you were going to say you were driving around. You always have a Michael Bisping fathead or something in the passenger seat that you can you just slap onto the.
No. But anyway, so there we go. How you doing? I'm assuming you're good. Last night I was not feeling good. I had the worst heartburn ever known to man. I had terrible stomach, and I had terrible trips to the toilet in between that. So if I've got to get up and rush off halfway through this, if I've got to go shit my pants out, I apologize, but I might just have to because that's what's been going on. There you go. Warts and all, we give you everything here on the Believe You Me podcast. But yeah, bit of a dicky tummy, as we say in England lately.
And it's like, that's the kind of thing that'll really kill your sleep, you know? Like, if you're sick, you can take some NyQuil and just pass out for like 6 or 8 hours. But if you got to keep getting up to go to the bathroom every hour, 2 hours, that just ruins your night.
Or you could just shit the bed.
I'd be embarrassed if he did that.
I don't know what you do. I can categorically say I've never shit the bed, though. Just an FYI. Just want to straighten that out. Much like my camera needs straightening out. I need to buy a new camera. 1 minute I'm bright, 1 minute I'm dark, whatever. We're going to deal with it.
I thought you were just sad to be doing the show with me, but I think you were tinted a little blue.
He's trying to make me
Yes. Well, it's a blue t-shirt. It's probably giving off that look. All right, Harrington, I've looked at the notes, but there's some stupid stories on there. We're not going to go through them all, but go on. Give us the first one. And I saw this on the news today, and I am far unqualified to talk about it, but break it down.
So Facebook, they actually set records today. The biggest drop of a stock in a single day on the stock market. I believe they lost nearly $200 billion in valuation, almost 25% of their market cap gone overnight.
Yeah. $200 billion?
Yes. So
$200 billion. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, so
that's
the company is
a lot of money.
Company's worth about $800 billion and their stock just plummeted by 25%. So yeah, that's $200 billion of your $800.
I mean, it's not real money. And who knows, by tomorrow, it could be back up. Do you know what I'm saying? Because that's just the way the stock market goes. But the reality is that Facebook, I'm assuming that Facebook will make a comeback because as you just said, they're worth $800 billion. That's a lot of money. Don't tell me Mark Zuckerberg and all these people there aren't thinking of innovative things, trying to become the next big social media again. Of course, they kind of invented social media, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe MySpace was before them. I'm not sure, but now, like my kids do not go on Facebook. Do you actively go on Facebook, Harrington?
No, I retired from Facebook in my mid-20s. You know what I mean? There was just nothing on there for me anymore.
I use Facebook just to stay in contact with like friends and family back home, you know, from Clitheroe, because, you know, they're all on Facebook and whatnot. They don't, no one fucking interacts though, but I just like to see what they're up to. Brian, are you a Facebook user? I've got a feeling.
I've been banned from the kingdom for years.
That does not surprise me. Why were you banned?
Well, I just like to call out people's stupid shit, maybe a little more aggressively than Facebook would allow. Yeah. So. Yeah, they didn't like it. I got suspended a few times, and now I don't even know if I'm allowed to go back. I just haven't.
All my friends, there's one friend of mine back home who's a bit of a wild man. He's always like running through. He's always putting videos of him naked in a pub, stuff like that. I don't know why. He gets drunk and he strips off and runs around. No, I'm serious. The first time he did that, I'm not going to say his name. Fuck it, Rick. Fuck it. He did it years ago. I remember. We were in this pub, it was called the Social Club. And in the back room of the Social, they used it for like weddings and stuff. And but most of the time on a Friday night, it was open. They had a DJ on and stuff. So we tried to go in on a Friday night. Like, no, there's a private function in here. I'm like, all right, sorry, we didn't know. And then Rick goes to the toilet, takes all his fucking clothes off, runs into the Social Club, running around at a fucking wedding. Do you know what I mean? Running around naked. He thought it was hilarious. Huge fight started. Wasn't good. Wasn't good at all. But yeah, that guy, he's also always banned on Facebook.
That's the shit I was doing before Facebook. Just running around naked doing dumb shit. I'm so glad it wasn't around when I was a kid.
But let me ask you this. TikTok. Any of you mess with TikTok?
Negative.
No.
I don't know. No. I see the stuff that ends up on TikTok when it makes its way to Instagram. I try not to go on it because I'm genuinely afraid of TikTok.
It's so fucking cringy. Like, it's worse than Henry Cejudo. It really is.
No, it is. It is. Seeing a grown man go doing these stupid dances and stuff, whatever it is, and whatever. I mean, it's like, come on.
Where is the shame?
Shame. But, and I don't know if this is true. You know Andrew Schultz, the comedian?
Yes.
Did you see this? Did you see what he said?
I was just about to bring this up. It's the most beautiful point I've ever seen.
He said, Andrew Schultz, the comedian, he said that the algorithm, because TikTok is a Chinese company, right? And he said, and this could be the biggest conspiracy theory known to man, maybe he's the most paranoid motherfucker ever, or perhaps he's on the money. But he said yesterday that, or whenever it was, he said the algorithm in America rewards people and, you know, like shares it more. And people monetize TikTok as well. I think some people make a good living on TikTok when they do these stupid dances and they're doing all this dumb shit, right? Dumb shit. That's what it is. It's just dumb shit. But apparently he was saying the algorithm in China rewards them and shares their stuff and makes it more monetary rewarding when they're doing good stuff, when they're showing like engineering or whatever it is. And it's designed to like dumb down America, essentially. I think that's what he was getting at.
So this silly bitch who does dances on TikTok made $17.5 million fucking dollars fucking doing hand motion.
No,
I'm so angry right now.
Hold on. Bring it up on screen. How many followers she's got? Well, 17.5 million. I will dance around for that kind of money.
I'll pull up her TikTok. I'm just on a Forbes article right now. Give me one second.
Yeah. No, do your thing. But my God, I mean, what would you, is there anything you wouldn't do for $17.5 million, Harrison? And I can't believe I'm asking that question.
No, I mean, honestly, anything that doesn't lose I would give up a leg for 17.5. Who am I kidding? Yeah, like whatever. You name it.
I think you would. Would you actually give up a leg for $17.5 million?
All right, are you cutting it at the hip or the knee?
I'd give you a knee.
I'll go halfway down the thigh. Halfway down the thigh, so you can wear one of those things, right? You can wear one of those, you know, an artificial leg. It has a fake knee. If you wanted to be like one of those runners, if you wanted to get yourself off to the Special Olympics, you could do so. You can still
be the Blade Runner.
You could do your day to day. You know what I mean? And you've got $17.5 million in the bank. Would you do it?
Yeah, in a heartbeat.
Brian?
$17.5 million? I could buy whatever I want. I'll get a new whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a lot, especially if you've got a good financial advisor. $17.5 million, you could get a good return on investment with that pretty quick.
Float that pretty hard, yeah. All right, so here's this silly girl who made $17.5 million. I'm not going to show you.
Hold on. Stop. Use the term silly girl very loosely, because whilst she made
$17.5 million, I'm just mad, Mike.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
She's a genius.
Correct. She's a genius, because don't press play because I want to see it. But whilst we're saying she's a silly girl, maybe she knows what she's doing and she's manipulating the market and the algorithm, as we just said, doing dumb shit and getting very, very rich.
Well, I'm not sure how old she is, so I'm not going to pull up the rest of her TikTok because we might get in trouble for child porn.
You're fine. I know who that girl is, and actually, like, she's
late at Harrington. I want to see it first. I don't know who it is. I don't know what she's gonna do.
Nothing.
And I was facing replacing.
I like the party, just coming to pet. I love my bitches a little bit sad. I like them bitches just calling me dad. I like the Barbies, but I want the brass. I like the.
That's it. But that's like the scope of her kind of content. That's the kind of, I mean, she's a pretty girl. You know what I mean? She's a pretty girl, and maybe people like to look at her, but she's not offering anything there.
Right. It's borderline child porn.
It's not child porn. It's not. But how many followers does she have?
Oh, man. Sorry, I got rid of it. But a lot.
I don't blame you. A lot. Like what? Like millions and millions and millions?
Yeah.
Like tens of millions or just like a few million?
More than 125 million.
Yeah. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot.
She was also at like one of the Jake Paul fights as like one of the girls who was like presenting the belt or something like that. She makes a lot of money off celebrity endorsements, and she had a deal with Dunkin' Donuts nationally to like have one of her signature coffees, like have one of their coffees be the Charlie DeMillo. So,
listen, fair play to her. Can't hate on that. You know what I mean? There's so many avenues in this modern life to make money. You know what I mean? And she found one there. She's making tremendous amounts of money. She's got deals.
But can you be mad at the people who eat the content and not her? Like, fine, she's great for figuring this out, but I'm mad at the people who just devour this shit and give these people the ability to be making that much money.
Or maybe they're just looking for something lighthearted as they're having their morning coffee and they're having a scroll through. She's easy on the eyes. She's pretty. They're doing nothing offensive. She sees that, you know, they see that. They're like, oh, yeah, that's funny, whatever. And she looks good, you know, and then they go about the day. The ones that I'm mad at is those idiots that go off and then they start recreating them and they're doing their own. Do you know what I mean? And they're not earning a penny. You know what I mean? Harrington, do me a TikTok dance. Let's have a one shot of Harrington. Harrington, let's go. TikTok it up for me right now. Give him a piece of music and let's go. But that is essentially it, though.
That's it. Give me my 17.5.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Anyway, but we were talking about Facebook. They've lost a ton of money. I'm sure they're gonna be okay. I'm sure Mark Zuckerberg and the shareholders will bounce back just fine.
This is interesting. They spent $10 billion on the metaverse, and that's where like a lot of the like people, the investors are losing faith, right? Their earnings weren't as high as they thought they were going to be. And then a $10 billion investment in the metaverse that they've seen zero return on so far. So
yeah, but the metaverse is going to take off in a big way. There's so many things happening and I don't know too much about it, but I hear grumblings. I hear stories like there's going to be fights in the metaverse. Do you know what I mean? There's going to be events in the metaverse. Like I'm doing something with Block Asset and we'll be doing... Like me and DC are going to be filming stuff with, let's say, a Henry Cejudo or whatever, and people will vote what the activity is going to be. And then they put on their Oculus headset and they come and join us and they're in the metaverse and they're there with us. And don't ask me to explain it all because that's about all I know. Do you know what I mean? But it's the metaverse, from what I'm understanding, is going to play a big part of the human culture going forward.
Very cool. Very cool. Right. I don't doubt that. So yeah, I mean, this seems like an investment in the future. And one of those things where it's like, I'm almost scratching my head. Like, why don't I put what little money I have into this if it's only going to go back up probably?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we're both knuckleheads. We know nothing about the metaverse. I know nothing about the stock market. And I know nothing about Mark Zuckerberg's finances. Next story, please. Something about an airplane in a nightclub.
Yeah, so this guy is pretty cool. He found a decommissioned British Airways 747. They were just looking to get rid of it, couldn't figure out what to do with it. So he volunteered to purchase it for one British pound and spent about $500,000 refurbishing it, but he's turned it into a pretty swanky nightclub.
I mean, that is actually very cool. Very cool. And if you had somewhere you could park that up, I mean, the thing is, I mean, where you're going to put that could be, I mean, it doesn't fly anymore, but, you know, if you had like a big parking lot, a nightclub inside an airplane, it's pretty cool, pretty niche, you know, or maybe just got his own house and he just has it on there. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to force about $500,000, he's probably got a decent sized house. He's got his own nightclub in an airplane. Yeah, it's not bad. I like it.
So if you figure like a vacant lot or like some kind of airfield where, you know, like that's not taking up a ton of space and you can just park cars in the field, that's kind of a pretty sick, you know, like a Saturday night spot.
It is. But I'm regretting letting you formulate these non-MMA stories because it's non-MMA. But is it a story? I don't think it's a story. Okay. Next one. I've seen this in the notes as well. Harrington's all fired up because the Taliban... Yes, the Taliban or rebranding.
Yeah, they're trying to soften up their image a little bit. So if you remember, we saw those images coming out of Afghanistan last summer when the you know, celebrating, the Taliban was riding roller coasters and shooting guns off on Ferris wheels. Well, no more, right? The amusement parks are going to be family friendly going forward as the Taliban is no longer allowed to go armed to Fun World.
So. So you can't take your AK-47 to the amusement park?
No, you can't ride roller coasters with Uzis anymore.
Can you in Texas or Arizona? They're open carry states, right? You can go anywhere with a gun. Can you take a gun to an amusement park in the good old US of A?
Well, I almost got kicked off a roller coaster for them thinking I had my phone. So I would imagine that carrying an Uzi would be against the rules of the park.
Yeah, how forward thinking of the Taliban. No more Uzis at the thing. What else are they doing? So what are they trying to do? They're trying to rebrand themselves as like a legit. I mean, come on, I don't know much about the Taliban, but from what I do know is that they do like to behead people that don't follow their faith. They do murder people. They do explode bombs on innocent people. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've just been fed a bunch of propaganda, but that seems to be the general consensus of what the Taliban like to do.
Well, I mean, you know the old adage.
Who the fuck wants to go to an amusement park in Afghanistan? No offense. I'm not getting on any of those rides, whether they've got a gun or not.
I feel like roller coasters in Afghanistan are probably, while maybe not as safe, are going to be a little bit more fun than some of these pretty safe amusement park rides in America here. So, yeah, I think I would.
There's no amount of money you could pay me to get on a... I've been to Afghanistan. I went there in 2008. It doesn't strike me as a country that has its safety protocols really buttoned up. Do you know what I mean? They're not inspecting those machines on a daily basis, you know, making sure, you know, get a little dash of oil here and there. No, it's all going rusty. So guns or not, fuck that. All right, Harrington, you're fired. I can't wait for Anthony Smith to come back on Monday.
Hurtful.
Very hurtful. And for that, I apologize. Okay, let's just take a second to hear from BetterHelp. Listen, if you have a problem, if you're going through something, if you have anxiety, if you have an anger problem, if you're going through depression, who knows what your problem is? But if you have a problem, talking to somebody will really help. And that is where BetterHelp come in. BetterHelp offers professional counseling done securely online. So if you feel like something is interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, then you definitely got to check out BetterHelp. Listen, I've spoken about it at length, right? I talked about my anger management. That definitely helps. So whatever you're dealing with, BetterHelp has a wide range of counselors available to you. BetterHelp is more affordable also. That's a big one than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available and it's easy to get started. Once you sign up, they'll give you your own professional therapist. You can speak to him within 48 hours. If you don't like that person, if you're not vibing, you can change. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online and from the privacy of your home as well. So no going out into the big wide world and sitting in waiting rooms and all that type of stuff. Listen, speak to somebody. If you've got a problem, we know there's a big focus on mental health these days, and rightly so. If you are struggling with something, then you should speak to somebody. That is why I suggest going to betterhelp.com/believe, BETTER, BetterHelp, HELP.com. BetterHelp.com/believe. They're going to give you 10% off your first month. One more time, betterhelp.com/believe. 10% off your first month. Good luck with whatever it is in your life. Okay, let's get back into it. Okay, but let's get into some MMA stuff. I saw this doing the rounds last night. It was a great video, a great piece of production by one Jorge Masvidal. As we know, UFC 272 going down in Las Vegas. Masvidal is fighting Colby Covington. This is a beef. It is personal. It is a grudge. It's a rivalry. It's a friendship lost and broken. They're two of the best fighters in the world. They're both coming off losses to one Kamaru Usman. This is a grudge match. They used to be best friends. There's a lot of shit talking going on both sides. Colby Covington has called him a bad father. Colby Covington has talked about his ex-wife and all the rest of it, to which Jorge Masvidal has retaliated by putting out a video. And I saw it last night. Very, very well made.
Yeah, I mean, the top of the video is Colby Covington, you know, professing that Jorge Masvidal is his number one friend. They're ride or die forever. You know, it's just him and Jorge that are there forever. And then, you know, the street Judas hits and, you know, Jorge just spends like 6 minutes exposing like every single time Colby has contradicted himself, cross-talked, been caught lying. I mean, it's really interesting to see in 1 6-minute chunk all of it in your face.
Can we play any of the video, Brian, or would it get us thrown off of YouTube, or can we just put a little snippet on for the peeps?
Yeah, I'll cover it for YouTube. So if you want to see what we're seeing.
Just put a little snippet on, just to give us a little context for what we're talking about here. But listen, that's what happens. And just put it on whenever you're ready, Brian. We'll just keep talking. Oh, here he is. Betrayed. And one of the 12.
My sparring partner is Jorge Masvidal, my best friend.
Jorge is my best friend, dude. Like, he's the only exception. I don't got any other friends. Jorge is, like, my only friend, man. If you knew the stuff we've been through.
Two against the world.
Jorge Masvidal, I want to end that, dude. I want to break his face, and I want to end him for just the piece of shit that he is.
The truth is Jorge Masvidal is a piece of shit father. He's a piece of shit fighter.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
I know there's some barriers you just don't cross. You don't talk about religion. You don't talk about race.
Brazil, you're a dog. All you filthy animals suck.
Brazilian members of the team, and there's a lot of them at ATT, all saying right. That they're upset.
All right. I never remember. Are you conscious of a time when Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington were going around saying two against the world, brothers against the world, going around arm in arm? And I don't recall that.
I genuinely can't either. But I mean, it was at a time where, you know, Colby and Jorge weren't fighting at the top of the card. You know, like these were guys who were either like, yeah, you know, they were on the prelims or one or two on the main card. So it would make sense that that little interaction wouldn't, you know, stand out in someone's mind as much as like a main event after.
Yeah. No, of course, you could have just said no, it would have been way quicker. I'm kidding. Listen, people fall out. That's what happens. And that's what's definitely happened here. I mean, of course, it's good for Jorge. And I like the video and leading up to a fight and they are the main event of a pay-per-view. It's great marketing. You know, a lot of people even say, I have comments all the time on my YouTube. They're like, oh, they're playing everybody. These two are still good friends. I don't think that at all. I don't think they're playing anybody. I just genuinely believe. And that's the problem as well. When you are friendly, when you are friends, when you're as close as them two were, when you are brothers, quote unquote, and then you fall out, it makes it so much more fierce, the rivalry. Do you know what I mean? They were friends and now they hate each other. You know, if they weren't friends, they probably wouldn't hate each other. They might dislike one another. They might dislike what, you know, however they behave or the fighting style or whatever words they said might piss them off. But because they were friends in the first place, that's what makes them hate one another. And that's what makes this fight so good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can see that from Jorge's perspective. But now watching that 6-minute long video, I don't know if I can trust anything Colby says. You know, I don't know if he was ever actually friends with Jorge Masvidal or if he was just a fighter who was on like his rookie contract. And this was somebody who would let him crash at his place for free and feed him as long as he was complimentary. You know, I don't know where he stands. But from Masvidal's point of view, I can 100% see where he wants to tear this guy's head off.
Yeah, for sure. Because Masvidal said, he said, listen, he's selling his soul for an extra 10 pay-per-view buys, you know? And I thought about that and I thought, yeah, fair play, because you don't shit on your friends to make money. You know what I mean? Simple as that. You don't do that. That's not how a man should behave. Now, granted, people do try and sell fights. I used to try and sell my fights. You know what I mean? I would spice it up. I would talk a little shit. I would insult them and all that type of thing. And I think all that's fair. But when you're purposely just trying to talk shit about a former friend for the sake of it, I think that's a little bit different. And then I think we might have spoke about this before, talking about his ex-wife and talking about calling him a bad father. You know, I mean, listen, for us as fight fans, as fans of the UFC, it's going to make this build up for it and make the fight even better. But if I'm Colby, I'd be thinking before I say those kind of things again.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, to make it part of the promotion and making an event on your Twitch to be like, yeah, this is me hanging out all night with Jorge. Like, I don't know, everything about that rubbed me wrong, and it feels like Colby often misses the mark with his trash talking, and this, I'm a little bit worried where we're at, like a month out, just how far Colby's going to go and just how much Masvidal, like how far Masvidal will go responding.
Nah, I don't think anything's going to happen. You know, I think they're both focused on the fight. I think for all the shit talk, I think they both probably realize that they're both amazing fighters and they both want to win. You know, they're both coming off losses, simple as that. You know, they want to either, you know, get another shot at Usman, pardon me, right? That's the ultimate. But I can't see that happening anytime soon. You know what I mean? But more importantly, more than anything, right, the best thing for them is to beat that person. It's all about pride. And then that person can talk shit until the day they die. But who won? It doesn't matter to a certain degree what happens after that. Who wins on fight night? So, you know, I mean, this is good fuel for promotion. It's good fuel for Colby, for Masvidal. You know, it puts a lot of pressure on everybody because the fight has to deliver. Simple as that. You know, both men are going into that. It is a must-win scenario whenever it gets so personal like that.
Well, it's like, you know, I look back on the Tyron Woodley fight, for example, right? Like Tyron and Colby, those two were circling each other for what, like 2-3 years before they finally fought. And so, you know, like to me, this has that same kind of buildup, that same kind of anticipation, unlike any other Colby fight. And we've seen him get that victory in a fight that he was talking up for so long and then do exactly that, right? So just sitting there from Masvidal's perspective, yeah, I agree. You can't let this guy get one up on you.
Who do you think wins? Right now. I mean, things can change. Opinions can change. When things happen between now and March, is it March? Yeah, it's March. March 5th. March 5th. Yeah, yeah. I'm leaning towards Masvidal. I think he can scramble enough to stop the takedowns, and I think on the feet he's just more skilled as a striker. I think he's faster as well, and I think he has more diversity, a different array of attacks, whereas Colby's predominantly a boxer, high volume, doesn't really have knockout power. Now, I've said that before, and a lot of people say, what are you talking about? Masvidal's just a journeyman. And if you look at Masvidal's record, you know, you could point to the losses to try and make that point. You know, and then you could say, oh, well, he had a great year in 2019. He hasn't replicated that. He did have a great year in 2019. So therefore, you can't take away his accomplishments. You know, he knocked out Darren Till, knocked out Askren, beat Nate Diaz in a tremendous fight. You know, there he still accomplished those things. Just because it happened in 1 year doesn't mean all of a sudden he's fucking successful is the point I'm trying to make. And then he fought for the belt and he became the BMF champ as well. Do you know what I mean? He's had a great career. I wouldn't define that as a journeyman. Simple as that.
Right. And it's like, you know, his only two losses since 2019 are both to the current champion, somebody who Dana White is like already projecting to be on his Mount Rushmore of MMA. So you cannot hold those against him, you know?
The two losses
now back to back, he is facing that being on a 3-fight skid, which is always a precarious position to be in. So, yeah, I don't know. There is something in my mind like Masvidal back against the wall, fighting somebody he knows so, so well, kind of like him getting it done.
Yeah, do me a favor, just push your camera down a little bit so our heads are aligned with one another so you look just as tall and handsome as I do, you know.
Well, I mean,
there we go. Look at that. That's perfect framing. Yeah, precarious, yes, for a normal person, for somebody that signs with the UFC. If they go on a 3-fight losing streak, yeah, you're probably going to be out of a job. For Masvidal losing to Covington and losing to the champ twice, he ain't going to get released from his contract. You know, who knows? I don't know how many fights he has on his contract. Who knows? But I doubt the UFC would want to part ways with Masvidal just because he lost twice to the champ and lost to Colby. Especially with this fight, and I would assume it's coming a little closer, so we are perfectly aligned. I assume this fight sells big. What do you think? I mean, they are both coming off losses.
So I think I looked it up not too long ago, and Usman versus Colby 2 did like a 700, maybe 750, 850, somewhere in that range. Masvidal, he had the big time pay-per-view against Usman over the summer there. I could see it getting to a million. I could see as a non-title fight, that is astounding.
Yeah, no, it is astounding, and it's also highly unlikely. I mean,
you think
a million's hard, man? A million's hard. I'm just looking at the fight card on Wikipedia here. So obviously, so far, it's the main event: Colby and Jorge, Marina Rodriguez and Yan Zhao Nan, Edson Barboza, Bryce Mitchell. That's a good fight. Devontae Smith, Eric Gonzalez, Marina Moroz, Maria Agapova, Jalen Turner, Jamie Mullarkey. That's an interesting fight. Nikolai Negramanianu, I butchered that one. I'm going down it. There's lots of great fights. Sergey Spivak and Greg Hardy. Lots of great fights. But they're the big ones in terms of name power, in terms of selling the pay-per-view. So, and we still got what? We still got a long time for them to add on some more star power. Some fantastic fights on there. It's a great card. But a million pay-per-view buys? I mean, when I fought George St. Pierre, we didn't do a million pay-per-view buys, and we had three. I mean, George St. Pierre is one of the biggest pay-per-view stars the sport ever saw, right? And it was his first comeback fight. He was stepping up a weight class. So there was that whole storyline. You had Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Rose Namajunas on there, TJ and Cody Garbrandt, plus a fucking ridiculously stacked undercard. It sold very well, and it got close to a million, but it didn't sell a million buys. You know what I'm saying? Getting a million buys. And people throw that around because Conor does it regularly. You know what I mean? Conor smashes it. He's the pay-per-view king when it comes to the UFC. Simple as that. But actually getting, you know, achieving that is very fucking hard. In boxing, a lot of the time, you don't get that. Nowhere
never.
Near.
Almost you know, never.
You get Floyd. Yeah, I mean, obviously you go back to the that golden era in the 90s and stuff. I don't even know. You know, when you had like Lennox Lewis fighting Mike Tyson and stuff like that. Just look that up real quick, Harrington. How many pay-per-views did that sell? Lennox Lewis versus Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. You know, that kind of era in the 90s, which was the golden era for me because I was old enough to watch it. But I don't know if they got that many buys. Maybe they did. Maybe I'm uninformed. What do we say?
So I'm looking at here. Okay, Mike Tyson, his whole career only generated... I'm looking at something completely different. Just wanted to amend that while I'm looking this up, wanted to amend that prediction. Usman versus Covington 2 did 700,000. Masvidal versus Usman 2 did 700,000. I'm going to say 800,000 based on that.
Okay, all right, all right. Well, Brian comes in here with Tyson versus Holyfield did 1.59 million buys. Wow. I mean, that was in the golden age, though, and that was pre-social media and pre-laptops and all that type of stuff. Do you know what I mean? Pre-internet. Ooh. Yeah, of course. When was that? Like 90-something? Mike Tyson versus Lennox Lewis 2. 1.97 million. Tyson versus Lennox Lewis. Tyson versus Evander Holyfield. 1.99, so 2 million buys. Holy shit. Floyd Mayweather versus De La Hoya, 2.4 million buys. Yeah, yeah. But these are the big ones. These are the big, like, legendary matchups. Oh, that's the top five. That is the top five in boxing now. So, yeah, yeah.
And that, I mean, that De La Hoya versus Mayweather is obviously matched by Khabib versus Conor, which is the UFC's biggest. So, I mean, they're right there, neck and neck.
Oh, no, for sure, for sure. I'm just saying, though, generally, for people to hit, whether it's boxing or MMA, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the top five in boxing, the top five in UFC. It's probably similar kind of numbers, do you know what I mean? But it's not a common thing. That's why Conor is so powerful. That's why Conor's made so much fucking money, because he generates those kind of numbers, right? And when you're generating those kind of numbers, you've got the world at your feet when it comes to fight sports, do you know what I mean? Because it's hard to do that, and that's what I'm saying. So Masvidal and Covington, yeah, they're stars in mixed martial arts, but they're not global superstars. I mean, they are to a certain degree, but I'm just saying, I think it sells very well. I think it does very, very good buys. I'm just saying a million buys. I don't know about that one, but still, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, I still think, to be fair, and if you get to 800,000 or 700,000 pay-per-view buys, and you can match what both guy did, what both of those men did against Kamaru Usman without having a belt on the line, that shows you, you know, that draw is real.
Yeah, no, the point I was making is I can see a world where it does a 600,000, 700,000, 800,000 buy. And I probably think it will do somewhere in that neighborhood. Point I'm making is to do that is so impressive. Do you know what I mean? A lot of the boxers, you know, get nothing near that. Obviously, you've got your superstars, you've got your Mayweathers, you've got your Tysons and people like that. But a lot of other champs, they're not pulling in those kind of numbers. They're just not, you know. Mm-hmm. So for them to do 6, 7, 8, that's fucking amazing. It really is. All right, moving on. Kamaru Usman, what is this story here? Told GQ last year that he made overtures to the UFC by jumping up two weight classes and taking on Jan Blachowicz for the light heavyweight title. I talked about this the other day on my YouTube channel, right? I understand that Kamaru is Nigerian, and I understand that Israel Adesanya is Nigerian. There's 209 million people in Nigeria. I was quite blown away, to be honest. I had no idea the population would be that big. Britain's got like 60 million people. I know America's 330 million. And I thought to myself, I bet Nigeria's got a healthy population. I was thinking 60, 70, 80, 209 million people. It's a lot of people, right? And I understand they want to see two different people with two belts because it's better for the sport. It's better for Nigeria. And, you know, I get all of that. But that would be a massive spotlight on Nigerian MMA, on the people of Nigeria, to have them to fight each other, potentially in Nigeria, which is Africa's largest economy. But I don't know. It might be Africa's largest economy. I don't know if they want to go put UFC fights on there just yet, though.
I think that they were actually talking about making overtures there. And this is actually, this is an interesting thing for me. I just processed this. What do you think has a better chance, right, of being a successful pay-per-view in Nigeria? Usman versus Adesanya or Usman defending his belt against one guy, Adesanya defending his belt against another guy?
Well, probably that one, because they're getting two title fights. You know what I'm saying? And then you throw in Francis Ngannou for the crack, and you throw on... There's a bunch of African talent coming through these days. It's wild. It's wild. What's that one guy? Dalcha Lungu-Mbala, I think you pronounce it. He's a fucking beast. But anyway, so Usman was going to jump up two weight classes. Yeah, I'm not against that. Because at the end of the day, he probably walks around 195, something like that. He'd be a smaller guy. But I honestly think Kamaru Usman's so good. He could fight at any of those weight classes and be competitive. I really do. He's that good. But still, let's move down. There was a fun one down here. Go on.
I was just going to say that, the Israel Adesanya ended up taking that shot and, you know, he didn't get the job done. But, Jiří Procházka, right, he jumped in on that, you know, and was like, all right, I mean, I'd like to see him try. He doesn't think that he would be big enough. So... let me just find this quote from Jiří Procházka here. Okay, I think he will be not so quick in our division, and the power too will not be the same like in our weight. How many kilos? He's two weights down under light heavyweight. That will be the challenge for him and a problem. I don't know what his weight is normally. He says he will beat Jan. That he said. Adesanya didn't beat Jan, and he thinks he can beat Jan. The big and strong work. He's a very big name in the fights, and this is a very strong division.
Yeah, and I agree with him to a certain. You can't argue with anything that he said. What Yuri's saying there is all logical, and it all stacks up. Izzy didn't beat him, but styles make fights. Usman's got the wrestling as well, which Izzy doesn't have. Izzy's a singular threat. You know, it's all on the feet, it's all with the knockouts. You know what I mean? Izzy's not going to look to try and take you down and ground and pound you, throw triangles or none of that shit. You know what I mean? But he's that fucking good at what he does. But anyway, if but maybes, we can hypothesize and pontificate on imaginary hypothetical scenarios all day long.
Well, here's a pretty real thing that just happened. Speaking of Jiří Procházka, he's headed down to Arizona to train with, I believe his name is Eric Albini and Henry Cejudo, of course. You know, he's joining Davison Figueiredo down there, who just had, you know, a hell of a scrap and became the flyweight champion once again. Wei Li Zhang is down there. John Jones, apparently, is stopping by and training with these guys. I mean, is Henry Cejudo building the next MMA super camp out of Arizona?
I don't think he's building a super camp, no, I think. And I don't know what John Jones is going to go do down there. Who the fuck is he going to train with? John Jones is a gigantic man. John Jones wants to compete for the heavyweight championship of the world. Why does he want to train with Henry Cejudo, Zhang Wei Li, and fucking and Demetrius Johnson?
Do you know what I mean? Jiří Procházka.
And Jiří Procházka, of course. But you know what? It was funnier to say Demetrius Johnson. We're talking about small people. That's what I was doing there.
Of course. But that sounds fun to me, though. Watching Jones and Jiri scrap, like just sparring lightly, sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, well, we're not here for fun. We're here to try and win belts. And John Jones is just going to come back. I mean, he can go down there. And listen, I hope they are developing a super cam down there. Who did you say his name? Eric?
I think it's Eric Albini, the guy with the glasses.
Yeah. I was going to say, you always see him with Cejudo with the glasses on. I had a pleasure talking to him one night in Jacksonville. In 2020. Very nice guy. Knows his shit. Knows his wrestling. Yeah, very smart guy. But for Jones, I just want to see him fight again. I couldn't care less where he's training. I don't care if he's at Greg Jackson's. I don't care if he's at fucking Mike Winklejohn's or fucking Matt Serralongo. Just fucking get in the gym. Get in the gym and then get in the cage. He's 35 years old. He's got to fight. You know what I mean? Yes, that's still young for a heavyweight. But... you know, the whole thing was Francis Ngannou. Ngannou might be out for a bit. They should do an interim title fight between John Jones and Stipe Miocic. If Ngannou is having surgery, if Ngannou is at a stalemate contractually and he's holding his ground, if that's the case and he's not going to fight, then Stipe Miocic versus John Jones for the interim belt, that makes perfect sense. Because if anyone deserves it, it's Stipe Miocic. And then on top of that, you got John Jones, who definitely, given the narrative and what he achieved at light heavyweight, should get a title fight. And that ticks all the boxes, keeps the division moving along. It gets John Jones back in there. It gives Stipe Miocic a chance at becoming, further solidifying his resume and his claim to being the greatest heavyweight ever to fight John Jones. And John Jones, you know, I don't know what's going on. I'm not saying he sees Ngannou and was like, holy fuck, I don't fancy a bit of that. You know, not like Stipe is exactly a small guy either, but I don't know. He said, well, you don't want to fight him, but there's Stipe, the nice guy, the fireman. Does that tempt you back in there? Do you know what I mean? It might do.
And let's not forget, John Jones made this decision to go up to heavyweight when Stipe was the champion and when Stipe, I think Stipe hadn't even booked his fight with Ngannou yet. So I think Jones's whole plan on moving up to heavyweight was to do exactly that.
Yeah. No, it was. It was supposed to be. Supposed to be. Step in there and fight the champ. Anyway, oh, Harrington's on a little mute action. What's going on in the background, Harrington?
No, I just asked. I have like a door here that's open, and apparently my girlfriend's on the phone. So, Brian just said he could hear her coming through on the mic.
Well, you got to shut that down instantly. You need to go and have a word and take care of the business. My God,
yeah, Brian, go hit her.
No, that is not what we're saying. We don't condone that type of thing. But listen, if that's what it's going to take. If that's what it's going to take. Let me ask you, are you a part of this, I'm assuming you are, this crazy cold spell that's going on again? Is it freezing beyond belief in New York right now?
Yo, it's been nice like the last 2 days. I'm seeing all the snow melting and like we had some rain earlier today, which kind of sucked. But yeah, it's been like, it's getting a little bit better. But I did see that a lot of places are getting freezing.
Yeah, it's the low 40s here. It's not bad.
No, that's not too bad then. Yeah, low 40s. Yeah, it's. I saw in the news today there was like, I don't know, a huge part of the East Coast is like getting like 3 foot of snow, really, really low temperatures. I'm like, fucking hell. Like here in California right now, we've had a long winter, but it's still very mild. I mean, right now, the blue skies. Let me look at the temperature right now in Fahrenheit. It is, come on, load, phone, please, load. Why won't it give me my location? It gives me New York. 68. There we go. You're in 46. Yeah, 68 blue skies. But at night, it's windy. It's cold. It's been raining. I'm sick of it. I'm moving to California. I'm paying all these taxes. I want the sunshine. I want to go outside in my shorts and not be freezing my goddamn ass off. Anyway.
So is it like that down in, I'm just wondering like where the line of demarcation is. Like because I heard San Diego is 85 degrees like all year round. Like
No. San Diego, yeah, is right by Tijuana. I was thinking of San Francisco for some reason. That's where Callum is. It's cold up there. Well, it's not cold, but it's chilly. If you ask my wife, it's cold. She's always fucking cold. All right, today's episode is brought to you by Sheath Underwear. You know the deal by now. They have been a sponsor on the show for a long time. Some of the best, but more importantly, the most comfortable underwear that you can ever purchase. Sheath Underwear offers incredibly comfortable underwear that's especially useful this winter. We've all been there. Boxers that bunch up, they get sweaty, they leave your man parts uncomfortable and sticky. Well, with Sheath Underwear, you can comfortably keep everything separated. That is because they have this dual pouch technology, okay, which gives your wiener its very own place to call its home, okay? There's no more adjusting. There's no need for sweaty roommates, sweaty balls, whatever you want to call it. Keeps everything nice, separated, cool, and collected. And the main thing is these things, they're very stylish and they're comfortable, okay? Whether you want to utilize that dual pouch technology, it's there. Use it, don't use it. That's up to you. The underwear themselves, they have great designs. They have new materials coming out all the time, like the mesh and the bamboo. So if you're training BJJ, they have a full base layer. And these things are hard wearing. They last a long time. The reality is you need to buy some new underwear at some point. So you want to check out Sheath Underwear. And when you go there to sheathunderwear.com, use the code BELIEVE20. You're going to get 20% off your order. Get your dick and balls their own apartment, okay? Sheathunderwear.com, BELIEVE20. Gets you 20% off. Trust me, these things last a long time. They look good. They look great. They're stylish. And they stop your balls from sweating. Okay, where were we? Anyway, we're 1 week away. Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker. I'm very excited for this fight. Did we talk about this on the last show?
Talk about what?
Adesanya and Whittaker.
I don't believe so. I think we might have touched on it very briefly, but
right. And by the way, people always go, oh, Bisping's losing his mind. Bisping's got CTE. Between all the Zooms that I do, between all the podcasts and the shows and the YouTube channels, sometimes it just gets a little bit of a blur, okay? And I don't write it down. I don't write entries. Talked about this on this show. Do you know what I mean? That's all it is. That's all that's going on. It's 1 week away. I'm very intrigued by this fight. Who do you think wins, Harrington?
There's a part of me that just is any fight Robert Whittaker's in, no matter what my brain or heart is telling me, I just got to pick Robert Whittaker. So I think I'm going to side with him in this fight.
Well, I'm not picking just yet. I'm going to wait and see, but I don't know. That was my segue to you. I was like bringing you into the conversation. It's a different fight. It's going to be a different fight, but it seems to me Adesanya's getting very personal. He's talking a lot of shit, saying he's not a good person. He's got an ego and all this type of stuff. I don't know why that is. I mean, listen, Izzy is a character. Izzy talks a lot of shit. He's a funny guy. He's got charisma. You know, he's got a big mouth, but he backs it up sensationally. I love watching him fight. No, he does. He does. You know, he's unreal. But I'm wondering if the pressure of Robert's getting to him a little bit. That's what I'm thinking. You know, certainly after losing to Jan Blachowicz, right? Because even though Izzy would never, and I might be way off the market, and I'm just kicking the ball around, so to speak. But you know, when you lose a fight, you know, maybe there's a little chink in the armor. You know, the mind isn't quite as rock solid as it used to be. You know what I mean? And it's only natural. And he lost via takedowns. You know, and Robert is an accomplished wrestler. Robert can wrestle. And he says that, you know, Jan laid down the blueprint. Well, then Izzy said, well, hold on. You said last time that Kelvin Gastelum laid down the blueprint. So which one is it? You know? And I understand Izzy saying that. I just think it's going to be a different fight. It's going to be a much, much more competitive fight this time.
Well, it's like, you know, I would put some more stock in that if I didn't see, you know, the Vettori fight, right? Where Vettori tried to take him down over and over again, and Israel was able to stop that, stay on his feet, and just like, you know, do exactly, you know, exactly seemingly what he wanted to in maybe not the most exciting fight I've ever seen, but certainly a performance where I had no question he was going to leave the octagon with his belt that night. So
he's just so tall, though. And that's what the issue is. Because typically when you're trying to take someone down that's tall and skinny, you think, oh, this is going to be easy because they're not strong. And you do want to get in the legs, you know. And once you get your hands around the back of the ass, generally you can pick them up. But when their legs are so long, Dominic Cruz is an expression that he uses when he's commentating. He says it's like trying to take down a table that has four legs. If you pick up two, then the other two legs are touching the floor. If you pick up three, then there's one. There's always going to be a leg there supporting somewhere. And it's kind of like that. Taking down tall guys against the fence is really hard. But taking down tall guys in the middle of the octagon, when you run through them, is way easier. So that's what Robert's going to do. He's going to take it down in the center of the octagon. And if he takes it down in the center of the octagon, it's way harder to get back up. That's why we saw in the Jan fight, Izzy never got back to his feet because he was in the center of the octagon. Against the fence, there's drills. You can lean against the fence and that will support you as you're trying to stand up. When you're in the middle of the octagon, unless you can hit a sweep, like a legit jiu-jitsu sweep and get on top, unless you can get your feet on the hips and kick them off you, it's way harder to get back to your feet.
So now I'm like in my brain, like mentally processing the Vettori fight. And in my memory, it was Israel moving, like circling around, always keeping his back to the fence and just striking at will and then finding out. So it's like, if that's the point, if Israel's not going to meet you in the center of the octagon, what do you do against him?
Well, that's what I said. I said, if I'm Robert Whittaker in that fight, I let Izzy come to me. I try for him to come to me, but of course we saw that it could end up like the Yoel Romero fight, which nobody wants to see because that was a ton of bullshit, right? That was a terrible fight, but still, was it Izzy's fault? He did what he had to do. It's up to the challenger to try and take the champ, you know what I mean? But I think Izzy would come forward. I don't think they're both going to stand there, but I think if Robert lets him lead the dance and he can just back up Whereas Izzy thinks that he's gaining in confidence, and the whole time he's drawing him to the center of the octagon. And then when you shoot in, you run through them. And anyone that's done wrestling here in America that listens to this, they know what I'm talking about. So I apologize. But you run through and then you change direction and then boom, they're on the floor. They're on the floor. But it's easier said than done because everybody says that, you know, just like with Cyril Garn. You take him down. He's a French kickboxer. Easier said than done, but Ngannou did do it with Whittaker. Everybody knows that's what you do. From his first ever fight, when he came to the UFC, people were trying to take him down because he's a great wrestler, you know, but he's got great takedown defense, but not out in the open, and he doesn't get back to his feet out in the open. But anyway, right, we've got fights this weekend, and all I see here, I look at the notes. Where is it? Down near the bottom. Here's what I just so everybody knows, ladies and gentlemen. Here's what we have: 5 week stories. Number one, Strickland calls Bisping a cunt in the promo with the schmo. I'm like, what? First of all, I know nothing about this, so I do want some background. But I will say this: I was telling you before we started the show. I interviewed Sean, myself, Paul Felder, the whole commentary team. We spoke to Sean yesterday about his fight at the weekend, which I'm very much looking forward to, by the way. Sean has really come out and become not a star, but he's become like a big personality within it. And he's on his way to becoming a bona fide star. He's on a five-fight win streak. His fights are always very, very entertaining. I guess the only thing that's missing are some finishes because it's a lot of the time by decision, but he's very entertaining because he talks a lot of shit. But he sat in the interview room when he walked in. The first thing he did was sit down and call me a cunt. So I'm very intrigued as to the context of what he referred to me as a cunt to the schmo about.
Well, talk about keeping it 100, by the way, dude. If he's willing to do it on video, then say it to your face.
Yeah, hold on. Let's look.
With the pro, with the number 7th ranked UFC middleweight, the man who's got his USADA t-shirt 25 times clean, Mr. Sean Strickland, in the flesh, just finished up practice fight week. How we doing, man?
Good, man. I spar leading up to fight week, and I did get my 25 times clean, but as we could tell from Adesanya and TJ, this sure don't mean anything.
Well, it means something to the schmo, but what also means something to the schmo is giving you something we promised. You got the Schmoest Interview of the Year award. Let's go, man. Not only are you great showing your crib to the world, by the way, beautiful apartment over here, give you a nice award.
You know, man, it smells a lot considering that I hated this fucking guy like 6 months ago. So it's nice that we reconciled. We came together. You know, we're doing big fucking things together. He might be doing smaller things, but we're still doing it.
A kumbaya-like moment. Now talk to Schmo for a second, man. You don't like the nickname Tarzan. So what kind of nickname can we give you here?
I don't know, man. It doesn't fit me. You know, I've always liked hate. But then again, that has some bad connotations. But I feel like it suits me. I'm kind of an angry motherfucker. I don't know, man. What do you think? What suits me?
Well, better looking version of a young Michael Bisping, maybe.
Fucking Michael Bisping. Don't compare me to that cunt. Get out of here.
All right, but talk to the schmo for a second, man. We obviously...
Bisping, I like you, but you are a cunt. Everybody in this room could agree. Schmo could agree. We actually talked about it before this interview. He was telling me how such a cunt you were. And I said, that's not cool. Don't talk about my boy Bisping like that.
Hey, way to throw the schmo under the bus. False talking right there. But listen, man, you're fighting Jack.
I'll be honest. Fuck the podcast. Let's just listen to Sean Strickland. That's been way better than the last hour of this fucking show. I apologize. He is entertaining, man. He's entertaining in the cage as well. But he's a wild man. He referred to himself yesterday. He said, I'm just a white trash motherfucker. Which it could be correct. You know what I mean? But hey, at least he's... conscious of who he is.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I don't know. The name Sean Hate Strickland. I don't necessarily hate it for a fighter, dude.
Well, he's got rid of the Tarzan because we got an email saying, yeah, no nickname from now on. And yeah, Tarzan's terrible, 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 terrible. Yeah, and he called me a cunt, didn't he? Well, that's all right. That's all right, Sean. People do that all the time. They're always comparing the way he looks and the way I used to look when I had a shaved head and said we look similar. Shaved head, both white. That's about it, I think.
Both, like, you know, 6'1" in the UFC middleweight division.
Yeah,
you know, the comparisons are there.
There's a few similarities. I was trying to think of someone what he said though, because he does talk a lot. He talks. He never fucking shuts up. He calls everyone a cunt. In fact, he was. What was he talking about when he came on here with you? Was he talking about killing you or something like that?
He said, "I would like to murder you for fun." So, yeah. You know, I think that might be worse. But I feel like he said it in a way where it's like the English way, you know, like, oh, that cunt over there, he's a good bloke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, no, the English way, we don't get offended by that at all. And I'm not bothered. I don't get offended by Sean. I like the way he fights. That's all I give a shit about. And I say it all the time. I love it if the fighters that I watch on TV are out there, they're doing good and they're giving to the homeless and they're feeding hungry children and they're giving money to charity and all that stuff. I do. That's great. And it gets you more invested with them if you know their backstory and you know they're a good person. Like Dustin Poirier with the Good Fight Foundation. It's great. Love to see it. It's fantastic. And he should be a shining example to everybody. But the primary thing that I want to see is good fights. When I, you know, if I had a job, if I finish work and I come home and I sit down on my couch and I turn on the TV and I put ESPN on, yes, it's nice to know that they use their platform for good. But the primary thing, the numero uno that I want to see is good fights. I want to see people beating the shit out of each other. And that is what we see from Sean Strickland every single time.
I mean, the guy brings violence. There's no doubt about that. And what really struck me when I was looking through like just his stats on UFC.com over the course of now an 8-year career in the octagon, he has stopped 2 out of every 3 strikes thrown at him, which just seems absurd to me.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's very, very impressive. You know, I was talking to Sean yesterday and we touched on this briefly, but I remember Sean started off as a middleweight. Went down to 170, and I remember seeing him. I used to see him at Mark Munoz's gym, Rain Training Center, and he was so skinny and emaciated, right? And he was killing himself to make 170. And he used to say, fuck that, you guys are too big at 185. I'm too small, you know? And I used to think, what are you talking about? You're my size. You're about my size, and you can fill out of it with your diet as opposed to killing yourself to make 170. And I used to think, you know, get a grip. Be a man, whatever. But I said to him, I said, so was it coming back up to 185? Is that what changed it for you? And you realized you were killing yourself? And he said, no. And I found this very, very interesting what he said. He said, because I don't know if you know this, some people probably do. He was in a nasty motorcycle accident. Remember that?
Yes.
And it almost ended his career. Maybe he wasn't the star that he is now, so it wasn't covered in the news. But he fell off his motorcycle. And I forget the actual ins and outs of the crash. And I don't know what his injuries were, but his leg was fucked up and he was out for a while. And he was told he was probably never going to be able to fight again. And he told me yesterday, he said, listen, I probably shouldn't talk about this. He said, but I got a ton of money from that accident. So he obviously got a lot of compensation through the insurance policies or whoever was at fault. You know what I mean? He said, and I don't know how much money he got, but he said, I got a lot of money for that. He said, and that is what changed my fighting style. He said, because that took away the stress of fighting. He said, because in the past, I was so stressed out with it because this is what's going to make or break me. This is what's going to make me financially comfortable. This is what's going to turn me from being a broke motherfucker to having money in the bank. And when you want something so much and it means so much to you, you overstress it, right? And it becomes a burden and it actually holds you back. He said, then when I got that payment and I had money in the bank, I'm still fine because I love it. But now I'm literally doing it. Yeah, okay, for the money and all the rest of it as well, because I want more of it. But he's doing it now for the enjoyment more so than the stress and the burden of what he's trying to achieve. And I just thought that was really interesting.
I actually, it's funny because when you guys were talking to Calvin Kattar on Monday, I knew that story about him. Like, he essentially was like the number one prospect out of New England, and he decided to run his promotion for a few years and take the time out of the cage. And that always struck me as like a really cool wrinkle where a guy could come into his UFC career being somewhat financially set and not banking on that money and being able to make career decisions from a place of strength versus like necessity. It's just interesting.
Yeah, well, and you won't find that very often, you know, with fighters coming up. When fighters are coming up, they are making decisions out of, you know, financially motivated decisions. You know what I mean? That's ultimately what determines most things. You know what I mean? Which opponent's paying the most? Do you want to take a short notice fight? Ooh, the money. Whereas if they didn't need the money, they might not take those short notice fights. You know what I mean? So that does determine a big part of it. And that's another reason, again, why you see champions fight less and less. When they become a champion, of course, you know, when you're coming up as a fighter, you got to fight all the time, you know, and you got to get your name out there and you got to try and build a following. And when you become a champion, they fight less. And that's for several reasons. But one of them is that they're financially secure. They don't need to fight every other fucking weekend simply because they've got money in the bank. He's taking on Jack Hermanson. I think it's an interesting stylistic matchup. Jack Hermanson is, I think he's got an edge on the ground, although Sean's really good on the ground. Let me tell you that. I can't make a prediction. Who do you think wins?
I am going to go with Sean Strickland. I just think that, you know, the Strickland is so much harder to get down. I think the 82% takedown defense rate, his striking defense is absolutely phenomenal. And I've seen Jack Hermanson in there with like heavy hitters on the feet with Jared Cannonier and just get caught in those exchanges in firefights. And I trust Strickland more than I trust Hermanson.
Yeah, interesting. And he's on a roll. He's got a lot of momentum on his side as well, which is always favorable. You always want that. Jack's had some up and downs, you know what I mean? He's fought great guys. He's fought bigger names than Sean has. This is like first big name for Sean stepping into, you know, the serious contenders at 185. But he's chipped away nicely, you know. Brian, what do you think? I want your detailed analysis. Sean Strickland, Jack Hermanson, Jack the Joker, as he's known in certain circles. Who wins and why?
Well, he's the only man to come on the show and physically threaten me and Harrington both with violence and or death. So I'm going to put my money behind him because
he's been
on the show and he's probably going to come back and I don't want that on my head.
And on top of that, he's out there. He's calling me a cunt everywhere he goes. He's calling it to my face. I didn't know he was calling me a cunt on the Schmo Show. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to have a serious word with Sean Strickland. Sean, step into my office. We need to talk.
If he's willing to say it to your face, why can't he say it to the Schmo? I feel like that's what gets you the pass. I feel like it'd be way worse if he was saying it to the Schmo and then not saying it to you in person.
I will say this, though. It has been digitally. You know what I mean? He hasn't been in front of me. He said it, you know what I mean, through a fucking webcam. Let's see if he's got the same energy in front of me. I'm just kidding. Of course he would. He's only joking anyway. All right. Okay.
So this was just one other storyline that both men touched on. Hermanson and Strickland both independently said that they believe that if they put on an exciting performance here and get a big win, you know, the highlight reel win, they could jump Derek Brunson if Derek Brunson wins in the co-main event next weekend.
Yeah, well, it all depends on Derek Brunson, doesn't it? Because whoever wins, whether it's Whittaker. Well, saying that, if Whittaker wins next week, they're going to do a rubber match. Izzy's been so fucking dominant. He deserves a third fight. There will be one apiece. But forget about that, and let's talk about contenders. Regardless of who wins, if Brunson wins, you would think that he's next in line. Right? But he's got to win impressively. If he wins impressively, if he goes out there and he gets a stoppage over Jared Cannonier, which isn't easy to do, then he's earned that right. It's as simple as that, you know? So, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I've seen Whittaker fight Derek Brunson. I've seen Adesanya fight Derek Brunson. I have not seen Sean Strickland fight either of those men. So there
no,
is a thing.
No.
I kind of want to see it.
Something to think about for sure. All right. So is there any big news stories that we didn't get to that have to be spoken about right now?
You did mention a fun one earlier. I got one fun one.
Fun it up.
All right. Kevin Holland was getting trolled pretty badly for his wrestling skills or deficiencies in the octagon so far, let's say, by a certain fan, who was talking all that shit. Well, Holland gave him an all-expenses-paid trip to his gym to teach him a lesson. Brian, if you want to roll that tape.
Come on, put that thing down. You're talking about.
I did see this online, and I thought that was a woman. With the gi pants dude. On. Oh, he's gone straight into a head and arm there. Or an anaconda.
Just make sure I'm a big head like Kevin Holland.
Dude, just talking smack while getting the sub.
Yeah, it just shows. Hey, I will say this, though. You're slightly wrong. From the story that I read, I think Kevin Holland said, if you can beat, I'll pay half of your flight. And if you beat me, I'll give you the rest of the money. That's what I read. But either way.
That slap on the belly was the most embarrassing part of all of that.
Yeah, no, I know. Hey, but you know what? Listen, all these people, they talk shit. They get online. They like to criticize fighters. They think they can do better. You know, I will say this. I do give him a little bit of credit for actually being man enough to say, you know what? Yeah, I'll try. You know what I'm saying? Because to, you know, at least he put his money where his mouth is, and they obviously sorely underestimated Kevin Holland and how good he is, but he fucking tried. He tried, and, you know, you got to respect that a little bit, and well done to Kevin Holland as well for saying, hold on a minute. If you think that's the case, let's go, buddy.
I don't know, dude. There is something fun to, like, you know, pros versus schmoes, you know, like that, pros versus Joes, like that concept of, like, you know, these guys who talk all this shit from the couch, like these Cheeto dust fingers dudes like myself. And then to get in there with somebody who you would disrespect ever is yeah. just insane to me. It's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, you got to be careful, though, in this day and age, because if he had hurt him, he could have had a major lawsuit on his hands. But still, all right, I got to get BS Brian.
I was going to say, have you ever seen Deontay Wilder beat the shit out of
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Deontay beat the crap out of that guy. That was awesome. All right, guys. Listen, thanks for tuning in and watching the show. Remember, if you've got any questions, send them into bynpod@gmail.com. Of course, Harrington, go ahead.
If you are enjoying the show on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, make sure you hit the subscribe button, leave a 5-star review and a positive rating. If you're watching on YouTube, click the subscribe button, hit the notification bell to make sure you get an alert whenever we drop a new video. And if you want to find over 300 episodes you can't find anywhere else, ad-free and uncensored, head to GasDigitalNetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM, get a 7-day free trial.
We appreciate you. All the best. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the fights. We'll be back with a roundup of all the MMA action with Anthony Smith and the guest on Monday morning. Or probably Tuesday morning by the time it comes to you. So whatever you do over the weekend, take care. Have a good one. All the best.